wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric.
In separate studios again due to coronavirus, although I actually had my first dose of the vaccine about 2 weeks ago.
Just brag.
Yes, I got the Pfizer, and apparently there's a lot of discussion I've been following on the internet that do you really need your second one? But I got the Pfizer, and it made me very, very tired for about 6 hours.
I've heard a wide variation on how things have happened. You know, for folks, some people have been like sick for a few days, you know, a fever, things like that. But yours doesn't sound too bad.
No, I felt really, really tired. And then I did sort of have a low grade feel. Like I was so tired. I was sitting on the couch and I'm like, I'm really, 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 really tired. And I also had like a low grade fever. It almost like, am I coming down with something? So I suddenly started acting how I act when I feel like I'm coming down with something, which is making a big hot cup of tea and throwing like 3 sugars in. That's like from childhood. That is my go-to to
your comfort.
I'm coming down with something. A sugared cup of tea is somehow going to make me feel better. And then I was fine the next day. But yes, like you, I have heard that, you know, for some people, the second dose knocks you out and blah, 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 blah. But whatever, I'm on my way to being dosed up. And it's an interesting comparison because my mom, bless her, is back in the United Kingdom. She had her first dose a week before me. Yet she has already been told that she's not getting her second dose until the middle of April. Because back in the UK, they've decided to go with the strategy of give everyone one and then start giving everyone a second. Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah,
like we have any idea what we're doing.
Yeah, so I'm supposed to get my second one sometime in the next 2 weeks, in which case I'll be able to run around and behave without a care to anyone else.
Well, that's not true.
No, I know. And that's why I keep telling people. Some people are like, oh, you're getting your vaccine. You can do whatever you want. And I'm like, well, no, it just stops you from dying. It doesn't make you bulletproof.
Exactly. Well, and also you can be, well, we don't know yet, but that you could carry it and give it to other people.
To other people,
so
exactly.
Wearing your mask.
So anyway, there you go. That was that was my coronavirus update. But we wanted to start the show. If you haven't listened to our last show, we went back and we discussed sports betting, which was now legal in a number of states in the U.S. And for fun, we had laid down some bets for the Super Bowl, and now is the time. And if you did listen to the last show, you already know the winner. It is now not of the Super Bowl, of our competition. Right. Now it is time for us to total up who won in a classic head-to-head competition.
Yeah, I think we did a total of
six bets. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they weren't totally matched because we were using different apps. Like, so for example, I had a last play that a quarterback would kneel or not, and yours was a run or kneel. So in other words, if somebody's running on the last play, it would count. And that bet you actually won because you chose run kneel, and I said there wouldn't be a kneel at the end of the game. But of course, it turned out to be a blowout. So there was a kneel at the end. Or there was a kneel at the end of the game. And I think you also got what the first Kansas City drive, to be specific, would end in a punt.
Yeah, so I won that.
I set a field goal. The odds were better on field goal. The payoff numbers were better for field goal, but that did not happen either. Other than that, none of our prop bets came in at all, like our winning margin bets, first score bets, who would score the first touchdown bets.
We got them all wrong.
But they're all, you know, that's not totally shocking because they're all long odds bets. I mean, like the kneel or not kneel is maybe something roughly equal to, you know, 50-50. But, you know, picking a player, you don't expect to win it. The whole point is you'd have to do it enough times to win, enough times to pay off at its 5-1, 10-1, 20-1 odds.
Definitely someone, and I'd said on that show that you know, just my own personal history is that in general, I had betted on horse racing and greyhound racing rather than going too deep into single game events. So I was able to watch the Super Bowl and become quite aggravated at goings on in the game.
Did you
which
just
I
say
didn't
betted?
Get. What?
Did you say betted?
Yeah.
Is that past tense of bet in British that I don't know about?
Yeah, I think it's just me just throwing it out there. I betted.
This was, you know, a little way of saying something that I hadn't heard before. Anyway, but I did win. The one bet I did win, which is I did pick the winner, and I picked it on a money line bet. I took Tampa Bay, which meant I was getting something like plus 150, maybe even more. So I had a very good payoff. And all those other little prop bets, I did like $10 and $20. I don't know what you did, but
no, I did next to nothing. I'm following the golden betting rules of only ever bet no more than 5 to 10% of your total pot. And so I have a competition going with myself across my three apps in that I am now trying to see how long I can go and without adding to my stake. But I'm still placing loads of bets. Like, I'm quite engaged. I find it very entertaining. And I was taking a lot of grief from my family about, oh, you're going to be an addict and all this kind of nonsense. And I'm like, yeah, you know, at a buck a time, how really, how much damage am I doing to myself? Addiction. Yes.
Yeah. Well, so that's, I mean, that's so a few dollars more than you. But I did put a material bet on the on that money line bet. So I came out up for everything, like far up, because it was part of the deals, like we mentioned, the promotional deals where essentially it was free money on the game because it was getting this matching money from like Nationals or something, so signing up through their website or something like that. Not that the Nationals gave me money, but it was like a free bet. So I did that as a hedge on my pool, which was like all year long. I think I was in the lead on our pool where we have teams, you know, eight of us have split up the teams.
Right.
And I was in the lead of that all year long until the Super Bowl when our mine and a friend's team faced off and I lost that. So, but on net, even with losing that, I was well up for the Super Bowl. So I don't, you had more of our traditional version of being right or wrong.
Yes.
I made more money.
Yes. No, you did. And that was one of the things was how much, although to be fair, just before we move on, because this is not going to turn into a gambling podcast, I downloaded the William Hill app. So I actually now have three apps on my phone, and William Hill are very big about constantly pushing you email. Hey, here's a free $5 bet on us and some stuff like that, which is kind of interesting. Although I will just say one last thing about the William Hill app. So I have an app for the District of Columbia. I have an app for Virginia, that bet MGM. The William Hill app is terrible at my location. It is terrible at my location. So I can place bets.
Like telling
the yes, I can place bets on my Bet MGM Virginia app anywhere in my home. William Hill has decided that I have to walk about a half a mile from my house to then register me. And my only guess is maybe it's because we live not too far from National Airport. So maybe I don't know what the airport. So so I just found it interesting. Like the William Hill one is like, yeah, well, you're not going to get much of my money. Because you're not making it easy for me to spend my money. So that was just an interesting thing. Clearly, you know, all these apps are using sort of different sort of electronic stuff to do the same thing. And I just found it interesting in that between two apps within my state, one of them is all generally is a pain in the neck about my location. I thought that was quite interesting. So anyway, that was so the winner of that head to head was, of course, once again, Eric, making me lifetime.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you have more right. I don't know if that counts as
real. Yeah, but you made more money.
Well,
okay.
I could. Yeah,
we'll call it a wash. Mm-hmm. All right. So we're also going to do a little bit more competing, not against each other, though. The Mars mission from NASA arrived at Mars last week. Too much storm and rain. And I don't know if you want me to play a clip of that now or if you want to talk about, because you told me in the green room, oh, you don't realize other countries have been going to Mars. And I'm like, what? I didn't know.
Well, what were you about to play a clip of?
I've just got a clip of, I don't know, I've got YouTube, CNN. Let me press play and turn the sound up.
Okay, so it's of the news thing. Yeah.
150 kilometers from the surface of Mars.
And there's now some animation of a spaceship going to Mars. And as you can tell, I'm now talking over news footage of the Mars landing, which leads me to my point that all this space stuff, frankly...
I have confirmation of entry interface. Perseverance is currently going 5.3 kilometers per second at an altitude of about 120 kilometers from the surface of Mars.
So there you go. That is live, or that was a recording of live NASA footage. And it says on the little promo, NASA calls landing the Mars rover 7 minutes of terror.
Yeah, well, that's just because...
So I think it's slightly overhyping it a bit.
just to give a little facts of what I was talking about is that, so we've been to Mars already, right? Like the Voyager was, which was the one that was a successful one, right? In 2000, just before the movies came out.
I can't remember. Voyager was the one though that didn't land anywhere. It just went through the galaxy. Cause that was the one.
Say Voyager, I think, might've been semi failed. It was way back when.
Yeah. Voyager was the one that got taken over and then attacked the Starship Enterprise in the Star Trek, the motion picture.
Voyager, yes. That's the deep space probe.
So why don't you get on your thing? And anyway, NASA called the landing 7 minutes of terror. I saw that written everywhere. Like, I felt like it was slightly overhyped.
So, I mean, this was the Perseverance rover mission.
Right.
But I'm trying to find prior. But at the same time that that was going... China and the United Arab Emirates had missions. They were not landing. They were putting up orbiters around Mars.
Okay.
But the reason that they all came the same time, and you can find a clip out there of Rachel Maddow on MSNBC going like a little geek for about 3 minutes at the end of a broadcast.
Okay.
Where she's explaining that the reason they're at the same time is because of the window to get there. Because as a planet, you know, they're rolling around different. You're at different spots around the sun,
right?
At different times during our year, their year. You know, obviously their year is not the same length, but so there was a window, roughly. And I'm trying to find how long ago it was, how long the thing took to get there. But whatever the amount of time it took to get there, everybody hit that window, and so everybody's roughly arriving at the same time. These two were their first ones. I mean, the United Arab Emirates. I don't want to make any big assumptions, but I'm assuming it's mostly bankrolled by United Arab Emirates. I'm not aware of them having a aeronautics or space construction business
inside the United Arab Emirates.
So I'm assuming it's bankrolled there. So they had their missions that went there, and they arrived into their orbiting status before we got there. But of course, we were going all the way down to the planet. And part of this going down to the planet was what they call this space crane, which I think would make a good name for like a band or something like
space
that, you know,
crane.
Space crane.
Yeah.
But what it is, you know, you're dropping something, and we all pictured the spaceships coming into Earth's atmosphere and the parachutes going out and the lander, just like in the movie Gravity.
Right.
But the trick is there's not as much air. So you could put all the parachutes out you want on a Martian thing, and it's just not going to slow it down enough.
Right.
So what it did is they put these parachutes out. It slowed it down to something, I can't remember exactly, 300 miles an hour the thing was falling still. And then when it gets to a certain distance, a rocket's fire, and then it literally sort of hovers with the rockets and like drops the lander on cables like a crane would. Just a much more of a mechanical drop, puts it on the ground, the thing cuts the cables, and then the rocket flies off to somewhere else and lands in a pit.
Very similar to the old-fashioned going to the moon way of doing business. Do you know what I'm saying? Well, like the moon was a vehicle, and then the vehicle split away, and then it landed on the moon and fired its rockets, and the other thing orbited, and then you take... Do you know what I mean? Whereas conventional wisdom always is... Like, you know, when you watch an alien movie, the whole spaceship goes and lands on the alien planet.
Yeah, but when you went to the moon, the same thing. Like, you dropped a thing, but the item with the rockets that's, like, hovering, it lands.
Yeah, okay, right? Yes.
Like, and then it takes off the platform. The difference here is the thing that never doesn't have rockets and stuff. It's
all right, but it's similar. But what I'm saying, it's similar. It's bits splitting up and not all landing. there are three ways to go to different planets. This way... The whole spaceship lands, or you beam down. If you watch any of these things, those are your three options of getting to other planets. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
And certainly from a plot device perspective.
Yes.
There could be some other things there.
As I've said before, that's my only experience with any of this stuff. So
anyway, they put it on there and started taking pictures. It's like much bigger than the last rover we put down there, and it's supposed to have a lot better technology. I thought one of the funny things was one of the first things it had to do when it got there was get a software update.
Yeah.
You know how like your phone, you know, it's you're constantly like every app is updating itself every 3 days or something. So they must have been like over the course of the thing going there, they're like, you know, we updated the software to remove some bugs. Like it's just like a little thing it says on the down, at least on Google, it's on their Play Store where it says, you know, What's new in this update?
Well,
we eliminated bugs and made it better for you. You know,
we joke, but I do want to tie it back to your original point that because of the way the solar system works, they're only sort of there are windows to hit these targets, and so to be fair, there may not be another decent window for 7 years. So you know something, we're ready to send the thing now. We can give it its update when it gets there. And I don't mean to oversimplify it, but I'm trying to underline your original point that, again, you know, movies and TV are very, very, very lazy about going to other planets. Right now, because of the way the universe works, you only have sort of windows of time to go and do these things. So to be fair, you know, NASA, China, whoever else, they are working under pressure a little bit, which is kind of exciting.
I finally found past missions. The last ones were the Mars Exploration Rovers, two of them, Spirit and Opportunity, in 2004, before you had Global Surveyor in 97 arrival, Phoenix in 2008, which looks like it put something on the ground, but I don't think it moved around, Mariner 3 and 4 in the mid-60s, which were flybys. Mariner 6 and 7, I think, were also flybys. 8 and 9. Viking, that was the one I remember from
Viking,
the 70s.
Yeah.
When it became the first mission to land a spacecraft safely on the surface of another planet, landed orbiter.
Can I say this? NASA have a long history of very boring names. Viking is easily the most exciting name. Perseverance.
Perseverance just sounds like
Endeavor. That's great. Mariner. What the hey? Yeah,
great persistent spaceship.
Yeah, Voyager. Very. You know, I don't know. Excited. I expect a bit more. It's like Dreadnought. I don't know. Something a bit more exciting.
So my other observation, I don't know if you saw this, like, you know, there was all this stuff talking about how excited everybody was about the pictures. The pictures were just amazing right out of the gate, but, you know, they're going to be even better coming soon.
Okay.
So I go looking for these pictures, right? I don't know if either they haven't shown us all these wonderful pictures or they are just really much more excited about a couple of pictures. Because, like, I've seen the picture of the thing when it was landing and it was hanging on the cables below.
Exciting,
there's this weird distorted picture where you can see, like, a little mountain range off in the distance. Sure, it's cool, but, I mean, it didn't look that amazing. I haven't seen any other pictures that, there's a picture of its own tread print in the dust. Like just took a picture of it's like a like you mistakenly set off your photo shutter while you were holding the phone in your hand, but I'm not too jazzed on it. But maybe they're saving them up and they're going to put them in a coffee table book and make all their money back that way.
I don't know. I find the animations are far more interesting, and I understand that that's how it's got to be. But yeah, to your point, I continue, and the NASA don't help themselves. As someone who has dabbled occasionally in the man didn't go to the moon theory and that it was all done on a soundstage, they don't help themselves with a lot of grainy footage. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't put anything out there until you got something where you can go, this is the real deal. And you're right. It's either grainy footage of what looks like mountains in the background and then basically all the animations. And I just, yeah. And it's interesting. Did you watch, I don't want to get lost down this tangent. Did you watch about a couple of months ago when the Tesla rocket took off?
I knew about it, but I didn't pay much
attention. See, I sat and watched that. Just like, I don't know, it felt like a bit of a throwback. And they took it off. And the pictures from inside the capsule were kind of cool. I was struck by how cool, like, the astronaut suits were. And also the fact that inside the Tesla space rocket, there weren't any control. Well, yeah, it was. It was basically everything. There was basically just one touch screen. And the astronauts on the ship were like, yeah, they don't have to do too much. It's all programmed. And that was both very cool and kind of unexciting. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a bit like going on
you'd like to have some switches and things.
Yeah, it was like going on a roller coaster ride. You just ride.
One of the main things is that this rover comes with its own drone.
Yes, this was cool.
Helicopter thing that, like, is, I don't think it's flying around yet. But it's going to come up later in our talking about films and things. But I assume, since I know of that. But that's pretty neat, right? Like, you know, and it's, I guess, even though it's got thin air, they can make it light enough. I see it's got a double rotor item that kind of keeps it up there. And, you know, if all it's trying to do is hoist a GoPro up there and take some pictures, that can't be too hard.
Well, and let's hope. I mean, again,
I want to know what kind of batteries these things have because, you know, listen, I have to charge my phone every damn day. You know, presumably you can make some batteries. This thing's supposed to go for years, I think. Although I guess maybe it's solar powered. I don't know.
I think that's part of it. That, like, it recharges. That's the same with what was the other one? The rover? That was Rover. I remember it got stuck and then they had a problem with it. And I, you know, I don't want to put the boot in because I know it must be difficult trying to handle all this stuff over these kind of a distance, but I don't know. I do feel a little bit that I want to make a general point. It is amazing to me as a human race, we can fly something all that distance. Like there's this sort of quite a big, like the difference between the ends of the technology. Do you know what I mean? Like we can get there and then when we get there, well, something might not work because it's an iffy battery or something like. Do you know what I mean? There's this weird sort of, I don't know, it doesn't quite sort of, the technology is, you know, sort of stretching like a rubber band.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So anyway, we're now on Mars, and this one apparently is going to just roam around this lake, and it's going to look.
Yeah, well, of course, the big thing is, you know, it touched down someplace where there's evidence of previously being water, and so what it's actually looking for is evidence of life, not current life, but evidence of prior life, because it would be pretty. And this, I know the email you sent to me, we haven't even really got to is it worth $2.7 billion, which I think is just the cost of the item, not even the mission, but the cost of the ship and stuff is like $2.7 billion to put it there. You know, is it worth it? Why are we doing it? And so I did a bunch of searching of like, why are we doing this thing? And a lot of it has to do with okay, let's go see if there is like microbial life.
Microbial life was how it was referred to. Yeah, there was a lot of dampening down expectations.
Yeah, well, look, listen, the thing is, if you we talk about whether there's life anywhere out there in the galaxy. If you were to find microbes in the next door house, you know, basically, you could be pretty jazzed about the possibility that there's actual real life somewhere around.
Okay.
Because, you know, if it's right over there, then it's got to be somewhere else. But also, there's evidence that it had a thicker atmosphere at some point. And so some of what they're examining is, okay, what happened to it over time? What happened with the water? You know, what happened with its atmosphere? Whatever evidence they can find, maybe partly thinking, not that, you know, just what could happen to our own environment. It's obviously not a thought of like, it's going to turn into Mars next week, but you know, whatever trends that they can spot that way, maybe be educational.
Yeah. No, I mean, there is a good reason. There are good reasons for going. They're just not as exciting as I'd like them to be.
No, they're very dry, which is actually going to feed into our discussion of that in the media. Which was there anything else on the real facts that we were going to talk about here?
No. But that 2.7 billion number, I don't know. And I wanted to make this point. I don't want to suddenly sound like one of those dudes down in the coffee shop just ranting away. Because I, by my nature, am slightly I don't know. I moved on a long time ago from the notion of is there life on Mars. I'm just not interested anymore. I'm far more interested in Hubble taking deep space photographs.
True, yeah.
That might indicate something way off out there. I continue to be, I always engage in anything I read on the internet about radio signals that could mean something. But the notion of, is there life on Mars? Yeah, that's yesterday's news to me. I'm just not interested.
I can't remember. Did we share an article between us? Like one of the recent things was talking about dark matter and dark energy that's out there and how like what we can see and what we can discern
appears and stuff to be like that.
A minority of what's out there.
Yeah. And all I'm saying is me on a personal level, stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, okay. That's interesting. I wonder. Mars, I know it's a long way off, but it is kind of close. And in a strange way, because we've sort of, in different forms, seen well beyond our own solar system, basically going to Mars isn't too much more exciting to me than, hey, we're going back to the moon. Okay, great. Yeah. We've done that. I don't know. And I don't mean to, I'm not in any way mean to, you know, downplay the complexity and everything of it all and the work and everything. I just feel a little bit like, yeah, in terms of this sort of checklist of things for mankind to do, this is just regular stuff now. This is like space shuttle mission number 35. Do you know what I mean? Oh, off it goes. Great. Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah. No,
what are they doing? Yeah. Oh, doing some stuff on satellites. Oh, fabulous. Okay.
Like, as soon as you do something, it doesn't seem very interesting anymore. Right. It's much more interesting when you can have like fictional, which kind of goes to what we're about to talk about here. And like before,
and I'm not suggesting NASA spend all this money just to entertain me.
No, I mean,
but you know what I'm saying though? I'm like, okay, we're going to go and look for microbes on Mars. All right. But if this was landing on Jupiter for the first time, right, I'd be in an entirely different place because it's somewhere we've not been. Yeah. Well, again, I mean, I was shocked when you said to me, oh, yeah, there's three other nations all got stuff up there at the moment. You know, so I'm saying Mars, I'm not suggesting Mars is suddenly the mundane, but it's getting there.
Yeah.
It's going to be old news. Unless they actually find dudes running a shop up there.
Speaking of Elon Musk, you know, he wants to create a whole colony of people. I saw one thing that had, he wants to put 80,000 people in a colony on Mars.
All right, that's exciting to me.
I don't know what for, right? The only thing I saw, is they said, listen, they may figure out they have some great minerals there.
Yeah.
You know, you pull it up. You know, there's always the talk of terraforming because they have a...
Is that racist to say that the UAE are going in case they find oil? I don't know. Is that a racist statement?
Mostly CO2 atmosphere. So if you found a way to introduce plants and could convert that to oxygen, that would be or other sort of, because CO2 can be converted to oxygen. So could you actually create a stable atmosphere there?
Right.
Which, of course, part of the premise of one of the Mars movies, Total Recall. We're not going to talk about it in detail, but that's, based on the Philip K. Dick short story, I think, not a book.
We Can Remember It for Wholesale is the name of the Philip K. Dick story. And of course, I wanted to spoiler. If you go back about 3 years, or if you go to our blog, type in the search for Mars. We did a whole show about Mars and popular culture, but to be fair, we talked about novels and music and all kinds of stuff. Movies was just
why did we do that?
I can't remember why. For some reason, something had happened with Mars, and we decided to look at Mars in popular culture. But we spent a lot of time talking about War of the Worlds, Grateful Dead, different bands. And so the movies was only a very small... In fact, we kind of skipped over the movie part of it. We just gave Arnold a shout out, and that was the end of it. Because
we're not going to talk about all the movies, but I did want to mention, movies about going to Mars... Go back to 1910,
right?
Which was I think it was a GE movie, because I guess there was a French movie that was going to the moon, and so they did a going to the Mars one,
right?
And then there's even the most recent movie, which I think I'm gonna. It turns out you can watch it on Amazon Prime. Is 2036 Origin Unknown, which is some sort of artificial intelligence kind of running the show on a mission to Mars or going to Mars or dealing with some Mars. And it's, what's her name? She used in Battlestar Galactica, the blonde who's also,
Katie Sackhoff is the other one. Just Starbuck.
Right. So
she's Starbuck.
She's Starbuck.
Yeah.
So she's in that, she's also in The Mandalorian.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And she plays a role in The Mandalorian that she actually did the voiceover in the animated clone series of Star Wars. So they brought her out there. But I get the fact that once you do some sci-fi, you're into the sci-fi. But I don't really know why isn't she doing regular movies too? I mean, she seemed like a good actress and, whatever. But she's way into all these sci-fi.
When you get involved in those things, it's like any kind of like doing voiceovers on TV. You want to try and bring someone in to do your voiceover who sort of has a bit of heft in that field, right? So what I'm saying is if you're doing a thing about military equipment and tanks, you're getting Bruce Willis or someone like that. Do you know what I mean? Because they've done action movies. So because I do think in all seriousness, I do think there is a far greater crossover between if you like science fiction, you are going to be naturally curious about science reality. Whereas if you watch, what I'm saying is, there may be dudes who watch war movies, but they ain't going to be interested in watching documentaries about war history. But what I'm saying is, I think the Venn diagram for interest is much closer in terms of, if you're into all this NASA stuff, then you're probably also a closet fan of Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, trying to think if it goes a particular direction. But in any event, you'd be more into the hard sci-fi. You could, not that I'm going to say those people aren't into Star Wars, but Star Wars more fantasy sci-fi.
See, I'm one of those people. Again, and I think what I'm now about to say is not going to surprise any of our listeners. I'm one of the outliers of the group. I'm all into Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek and all that. When it comes to this regular NASA stuff, I ain't that interested. So I'm an outlier, dude, and I'm not. Oh no, to be fair, I underplay myself a little bit. I do like things like The Right Stuff and movies like that. But just watching a special of satellite images of Venus, I ain't that interested. There's right. Doctor Who going to Venus. Oh, I'm into that for an hour and a half.
Sorry, I'm adjusting something so we don't get more alerts here.
All right, so are there other movies you want to talk about before we come to our, like, big ones and our, you know?
You know, there's, like, a lot. There was the Mars Attacks, so that's attacking, though. But I see what you're saying, like, a mission to Mars. You know, Ad Astra, they went through Mars. You know, he went to the moon, then he goes to Mars, and he takes off from Mars. And I was reading some review talking about how, like, the Mars base there appears to be, like, an insane asylum. I just remember, like, it doesn't play much of a role. He goes to Mars. He talks to somebody, has to sneak on the ship in order to go the further distance to go find his dad. This is Brad Pitt and Ad Astra. It is a weird sort of step. It isn't, but it is, like, it's what probably Mars would end up being, is just a regular place, you know, like, you just a way station.
Yeah, you know, there is that. When you watch Ad Astra, there's obviously the moon, because he goes to the moon first, and the moon is just
shootout on that.
Yeah, the moon, but the moon is kind of a destination, like, you know, almost like, you know, you fly into one airport and you try and cross town to the other
except
airport.
For the fact that they're like pirates out there.
Yeah, that's true. But Mars does sort of have, in that movie, Mars is this sort of almost a backwoods, backwater.
Well, people who are on Mars, like, they're spending their life on Mars, right? Yeah. Like, and that's the idea, is it's such a far trip, unlike the moon, which people are kind of going back and forth and from, like, it's just a, like you said, an airport, whereas Mars is like having to take a big trip just to get there. And so some people pass through, but some people, they just spend their whole life there. Like the one woman he talks to, I think she said she was born there and she's in her 30s or 40s or something when they show her in the movie. So anyway, but of course they had the old Martian Chronicles. We could do a whole thing on that. That was, as again, I was reading some review, is like, you took suburbia and you put it on Mars. You right. know, they just had houses in hanging around.
Or I saw someone talk about this movie this week, the much unloved and unwatched John Carpenter Ghosts of Mars.
Which I actually find
is a very entertaining movie myself. Yeah.
About John Carter, was that weird. It was like a bring forward of a 1912 novel where, like, in the novel, it was like a Confederate soldier going to Mars. And this one, it's some weird guy in weird outfits. But that actually did better than the movies we're going to talk about now that I looked at the stats.
Oh, yeah. So I guess we can segue to the two main movies. So the year 2000 was almost in Mars popular fiction or Mars cinematic history was mm-hmm. almost quite prescient to the year 2020. Because right here in 2020, NASA have stuck their rover on the planet Mars. China and the United Arab Emirates are in orbit around Mars. Everyone's on their way now. In the year 2000, about 7 months apart, two movies came out, both about manned missions to Mars.
And yeah, well, it's the classic case we've talked about before with these movies where suddenly two movies on a topic will come out at the same time, and you're never quite sure, like, what espionage or whatever it was that led to this tie up. Like, you had the two blowing up White House type movies. Yep. You had the two with the Armageddon and Deep Impact, you know, about meteors coming to hit, you know, right. or asteroids or whatever it was, the stuff that we're really worried about.
That's what the money should be spent on.
but that year, for whatever reason, you got Mission to Mars and Red Planet come out far apart. Now, like, there were some, one was in like spring and the other one was like November.
I'm gonna say this now, the standard movie rule is always the second one is better. That tends to be like conventional wisdom. And I think if you then apply that rule to Armageddon and Deep Impact made like $1.25. And everyone went to see Armageddon and thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. When it came to the competing White House is being taken over movie, there was Olympus Has Fallen. No, yes. Is that the first one? Olympus Has Fallen is a Gerard Butler movie. And that was first, made a lot of money. But the second one was White House Down with Jamie Foxx and Channing Tatum. And I personally think that is a far more entertaining and funny. Yeah. And it just seems less cliched than the Gerard Butler movie. Although, to be fair on Gerard Butler, all his movies seem kind of cliched.
Yeah, I haven't seen those movies. So
you haven't seen White House Down? No. It's actually quite good, and it's got a pretty decent cast. And the rug gets pulled out a couple of times. And Channing Tatum is very good in it. And Jamie Foxx is very good in it. And there's a couple of other people. Oh, the one actor. I'm not going to get lost in. You'd recognize his face. Very entertaining. They're also the two. There were the two, like, natural eco-disaster movies. Like Day After Tomorrow, and then there was another one.
2012.
Yeah, like, so all these things.
I don't remember if those were the same year or not, but yeah, that was a weird kind of overlap. Yeah.
So anyway, the year 2000 had two movies that both had sort of missions to Mars as their main fictional theme. The first one that came out was Mission to Mars, directed by Brian De Palma. Do we want to sort of lay them both out there and then we can compare them, or how do we want to do this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I just the basics. Maybe talk about, you know, like who was in them and who directed them. And
right. So Mission to Mars came out. It was directed by Brian De Palma, who directed the original Carrie and, frankly, and The Untouchables, and kind of made his name during the 70s and 80s doing, to be fair, kind of upmarket slasher movies and those kind of thrillers. And he's a big buddy of George Lucas, because he has that famous quote about when George Lucas showed them all the first cut of Star Wars, because like him and all this crew hung out to her. Brian De Palma's reaction was, what are you doing? What's all this space that he's like, this movie's going to make about $1.50. So anyway, Mission to Mars stars Tim Robbins, Don Cheadle, Connie Nielsen, Jerry O'Connell, and Kim Delaney. And they're all basically going to Mars. That it's a rescue mission to Mars.
Did you miss Gary Sinise?
Oh, Gary Sinise. I'm sorry. I did miss him. Like,
he was sort of the star.
Yeah, he is. He's the star. And that was the only dude with an Oscar. Because didn't he win an Oscar for Forrest Gump?
Yeah.
He won Best Supporting Oscar for Forrest Gump. So Gary Sinise. And it's written by a couple of interesting names. The Thomas brothers, Jim and John, whose first big script was the original Predator.
All right.
Yeah. And also a guy called Graham Yost was also involved in the screenplay. He has gone on to helm a whole load of very good TV series on FX. And he tends to be, he did Justified. He's also helped out with the TV Fargo. Like, he's now their sort of like FX's showrunner dude that they bring in to help work with series. The music to Mission Mars was done by Ennio Morricone, the famous name. Ennio Morricone. And basically they go to, Don Cheadle's already up there, and then something happens, and then they have to go rescue
him. Let's not talk about plot. Just give him the, and then we'll talk about like what's better and why.
All right, but so let's go to the other one. The other one that came out about 6 months later is called Red Planet, and it stars this cast: Val Kilmer, Carrie Ann Moss, Tom Sizemore, Benjamin Bratt, Simon Baker, and Terrence Stamp. And again, these dudes have all gone to Mars, but they're much more. They go in there, I think, to figure out.
It's in this one. So, well, that's the plot. But like, just in terms of people involved in it, the main thing that jumped out at me is that the guy who directed it, Anthony Hoffman, had done like commercials something before that, and he never has done a movie since.
And I have some background on that, and we will get to that a bit later.
But yeah, like, but plot wise, I'll talk a little bit about the plot because I don't even remember. I had to read up on this because I didn't really remember the movies. I've seen lots of halves of the movies, probably from partway on, because it'll be on cable and I'll watch it. But I can honestly say I'm not sure if I watched them from start to finish.
I've seen this one start to finish. I haven't. Mission to Mars, I have the same experience you have with this movie, with Mission to Mars.
Okay.
That I've only ever watched it in bits.
The premise in Red Planet is that we're doing that terraforming stuff. We have sent algae up to Mars to convert the CO2 to oxygen with the plants of being there. We find out, or there's some readings that come back that say, hey, it's not making all the oxygen we wanted, or the algae's dying, or something like that. So they go up there to investigate and then find out that there's little creepy crawly bugs that are doing stuff and consuming all the algae and also the people and other weirdness going on around there. But not, I don't think there's any, it's all pretty straight. I mean, it's not legitimate science, but it's intended to be like legitimate science. So it's less, it's more hard sci-fi in a weird way than the other one, which the Mission to Mars, where they have that failed mission. I forget whatever breaks down, and they end up leaving Don Cheadle around for a while. But the net result at the end of the day is they find evidence of a prior society that lived there. And I spoiler alert for a movie that's this old. Like the what they seem to find out is that this society left Mars when they had their problems with the planet, and at the time seeded Earth with DNA. So in theory, we are somehow related to them. And then what is it? Gary Sinise like communes with the aliens, and it's all becomes very 2001-ish. Like when they open things up, it sends off a signal somewhere to like invite people along, and it becomes very like, metaphysical or something like that is the right word. It makes me think of 2001. Like 2001, the whole premise was we unearth these things on these planets. It sends a signal off to society, these higher societies that have gone well beyond us, that's supposed to like, it's like a trap, you know, like not a trap. It's like a warning to them or a notice to them. Then they come back and they sample you, or they figure out whether you're any good. It's also somewhat similar to Prometheus. Prometheus, they didn't invite us out there, but again, it's like us going out to find out origin stories and tracking down the relationship to things.
Well, Earth. And I do want to jump back to a point you made that was very interesting about the types of sci-fi that are out there. And you mentioned Prometheus, and Prometheus, obviously, at the end of the day, is a monster movie, right? It's aliens and it's science fiction and spaceships.
And Red Planet is kind of monster movie too.
Well, that's it. Red Planet seems like the monster movie, and yet in a strange way, it's the far less.
Well, it's like a monster movie, like Jaws. Like, listen, the shark.
My original point was going to be like Red Planet is just the whole. Your mission to Mars seems like almost wants to be like 2001, like a documentary, which is the case for 2001 for about 2 hours, and then it goes off the deep end with aliens and all kinds of stuff. That's what Mission to Mars is. Whereas Red Planet ultimately never does really goes down the. It's not an alien movie, right? No. So it's not making that big sort of science fiction fantasy step. In the way the mission,
you know, what's weird, you said it's not an alien movie in this that same sense, but it's more like Alien, the movie.
But that's what I'm saying. They're just the different movies. Like Mission to Mars is very like pseudo realistic, and yet the whole plot revolves around like some hidden alien society. Do you know what I mean? Like so that sort of almost sort of contrasting.
That's sort why of thrust I consider it to be films. The more fantastical. Like either one. Like, okay, I get the fact that either one could be technically true. It's not like the Force, right? Like the Force is, you know, Star Wars kind of magical stuff, you know, that doesn't have any. I mean, they tried to make some science ties, but it doesn't matter. But the point is either one could be true. It's just that Red Planet is much closer to something that you could actually fathom being true, whereas the notion of like this alien society that's inviting us out there by leaving behind stuff and a big sand turbulent thing that wipes everybody out. Right.
But what I'm saying, when you visually watch Red Planet, when you visually watch it, it's got like a style almost like a 1930s Flash Gordon. Do you know what I mean? Like the suits look very cool. Whereas Mission to Mars wants to look like a Discovery Channel documentary about what a space mission would
be. I think they
said
they were set in different times. Like,
yeah, that's
technically
fair.
Red Planet was set further into the future, so they could get away with a little bit more super futuristic.
Like, so for example, it's closer. Like Red Planet, don't worry too much about the whole gravity stuff. Whereas Mission to Mars, it's what's that phrase? Science fact. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yes, we're going to simulate zero gravity. Whereas, you know, it's like when you watch Star Trek. No one ever really explains why everyone can walk around, but they just can, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, and that's what I'm saying. Mission to Mars wants to adhere to all these like science rules, and yet it is truly science fiction because it's alien civilizations and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and the big thing that Red Planet has that is actually tied to Atlantic Voice also is this robotic dog animal thing.
We're going to come to
that. You know, we've talked about the, what is it? The research outfit that does the robot dogs that we've talked about before. This predated
them.
Yeah, but it's the kind of thing like when you see this thing, I mean, it's very stylized from the movie, but you're like, yeah, we could definitely have one of those things. Right. You know, we could definitely have a autonomous four-legged robot animal thing around that, you know, that would go around and ultimately end up killing people.
Yeah, and to be fair, so that movie came out in the year 2000. We first talked about that technology in 2013. So to be fair, on Red Planet, it was in front of the curve in imagining this sort of thing. All right, so here's the reality. Neither film, do we want to start ranking them then? And breaking down?
Neither film did well.
No.
Neither film was well reviewed, but Red Planet did much worse.
Red Planet was
a full-on bomb in the movie theaters and review-wise.
So it's interesting for me when I watch these two movies, and I send you a couple of categories for how to compare them. And one was like critical reviews, and neither one did very well. The other one was the classic made back their money. Neither one did very well. On the face of it, Mission to Mars aspires to be, we've mentioned 2001, I think it aspires to be 2001-ish. It tries to take a very realistic view of space travel and space exploration. In fact, I think at the start of that movie, when they're putting the rescue team together, the big debate about the window to get to Mars is closing. And there is an argument about whether we should go at all. And of course, Gary Sinise is like, we need to get Don Cheadle back. There is some other people, unimportant members of the cast, are going, forget that guy, because the window is closing and this is all too much effort.
So this is before or after Tim Robbins' face is frozen.
Right. Yeah. Spoiler. So, you know, whereas Red Planet, again, dispenses with a lot of that stuff. It just heads to Mars and starts doing things. So I thought I'd compare the two casts, because on the face of it, maybe it's best to say where we stand on these movies now.
Yeah.
I enjoy Red Planet a lot more than Mission to Mars.
I know you intended that to be revolutionary, but I would say the same thing.
It's interesting. Red Planet has the worst reviews and made zero, almost like it was cratering, for want of a better phrase, money. And maybe
if I'd seen them in the theaters, like it was an event, I probably would be like, oh, it was worth it more to go to the theater to see Mission to Mars. Like, because I would feel more like, oh, there's somebody put out an art piece. It was worth going to see on a big screen. But in terms of throwing on the cable and what I'm going to actually enjoy more,
it's Red Planet.
You know, while I'm doing it, it's Red Planet for sure. Like, it's just cooler. And Val Kilmer, I think, is cooler, and Tom Sizemore to a lesser extent, but Val Kilmer's like,
well, I was going to compare
swashbuckling and Tom Sizemore's funny, and
I was going to compare the casts because to just backpedal on the point you made right there, Red Planet is, in terms of two movies coming out the same year about the same thing, Red Planet actually breaks the rule of the second one does better, because the second one did worse, and I can't decide if at some level, you know,
I think it was because of the first one, right? Like, I think the thing is, the reason that you'd usually expect the second one to be better is because if it's truly a better movie, they don't, the one that's the lesser movie feels more rushed to get out to the theater, so it's probably going to squeeze in there. But these were two so far apart, I imagine they were not really competing for release dates, and I imagine because the Mission to Mars was like badly reviewed and people didn't go see it, that when another Mars movie came
out,
I'm not doing that again. That's pointless.
Whereas, to be fair, even all the other ones we used, even with Deep Impact, you know, because it was a DreamWorks production and it had all-star cast, you know, and like, yeah, this movie's not that great, but it ain't like it wasn't hammered by the critics when it came out. It in a strange way, it's almost the perfect appetizer for the main event of Armageddon. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if you go to a restaurant and the appetizer's nasty, there's a good chance you might walk out. And I think maybe to stretch that analogy, Mission to Mars didn't do very well, and I don't think it's a very entertaining movie. It's very super slow. And then people go, so why am I going to see another Mars movie?
You know, it'd be interesting. I don't know if this is jumping ahead to something that you were thinking about, but if these things came out now, Mission to Mars is thinky sci-fi.
Right.
It may not be good, but it's totally the thinky sci-fi stuff we've been talking about with Gravity and those movies and Interstellar and all these movies over the past few years. Like, right. I don't mean just the movie itself as it was, but if somebody was to make that movie now, like, and so I bet you it would get much, it would end up much better. Like, there'd be more backing for it and it would be done well and people would say it was worthwhile. Whereas Red Planet would be a monster movie. It would be more like Prometheus and,
right.
and maybe would have the same back. We wouldn't really be thinking of them as like, you know, the fact that these two movies are grouped together because the same year, because they went to Mars is kind of wrong because they're just not the same genre of movie. Like, even though they're both sci-fi, like we would really think of them separately. Although I guess Prometheus is a thinky monster movie,
right.
but I think they would be better done and better received now than they were 20 years ago.
So let's start with the casts, because I thought we could compare casts. We can compare casts, we can compare the looks of the movies, we can compare the effects, we can compare the stories, and then we can come to a conclusion.
Yeah. The only catch is I've already told you everything I know about those things. So,
well, I looked at Mission to Mars, and it's got Gary Sinise, who's won an Oscar, and Tim Robbins, who's sort of been around, you know, Don Cheadle. So this movie, you know, Connie Nielsen, all these people who are sort of like indie,
yeah,
you know, quite a straight-laced, relatively sort of mid-heavyweight cast, right? So, okay, you look at Red Planet, and this is where I think Red Planet wins. This is a far more interesting bunch of dudes, A, on a movie, B, on a space flight. Val Kilmer, Carrie Ann Moss, Tom Sizemore, Benjamin Bratt, who I think was still in his just coming out Law and Order phase, I think. Simon Baker.
Probably.
The great Terrence Stamp, you know, British 60s, swinging 60s icon. Apparently, I read online, Val Kilmer and Tom Sizemore were not getting along. Because apparently, Val Kilmer, who had been known and is still known for being slightly difficult on set, but apparently was getting into it with Tom Sizemore about the size of their trailer and who was the star and I'm the biggest star and all this kind of nonsense. And it actually got to the stage where when they were filming one of the fight scenes, you know, there was a lot of, you know, everyone standing around to make sure that no one was taking a swing at someone for real. Apparently it got to the stage that they wouldn't talk to each other and they needed body doubles to film certain scenes. Do you know what I mean? Like when you're filming over the shoulder of the other dude, right. Or someone just does all his dialogue one way and some assistant on the side is reading the other dialogue. Like, they just didn't want to be in the same space. And you talked about the director, Anthony Hoffman, who had only ever done commercials. Obviously the film didn't do very well, so that's always hurting a new director. But apparently, too, he got to the stage that working with nobody on commercials is a lot easier for me to make money than be showing up every day dealing with all these dudes who think they're movie stars. And I don't want to be mean because I love Val Kilmer. He's not George Clooney, is he? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And Tom Sizemore's a great actor, but he's always ever dude number three or dude number four. Do you know what I mean?
Well, for both of those guys, though, they're on the backside from there on out in terms of their careers, too. So.
But Benjamin Bratt's in it, who I always think is great. I think he's very, you know, he's one of those dudes who's, you know, he was a big lead on TV on Law and Order, and he spends all his time showing up in other movies, like not quite cameo, but like extended cameo, where he's always. I think is he in Steven Soderbergh's Traffic? I think he's in Traffic, isn't he? Shows up in that.
I'd call him a character actor, but you'd have to be more interesting character to be a character actor.
Ooh, that's harsh. You know, Benjamin.
He's fine.
As far as I'm concerned, he has an engaging screen presence. Terrence Stamp was sort of having like a mini comeback. He too had been in a Steven Soderbergh movie, so I find him interesting. Simon Baker is in Red Planet. He went on to be the mentalist on TV. And, of course, Carrie Ann Moss has sort of like sci-fi chops from being in The Matrix. So she's got that sort of sci-fi street credibility. Whereas, to be fair, and I say that now, because I still think with any of these films, how you cast them is the most, is, it's something almost like subconscious that if you cast the right way, then the audience immediately buy into it. My biggest problem with Mission to Mars is Tim Robbins. I don't see Tim Robbins as an astronaut.
Well, didn't he play sort of like a weirdo?
Yeah, but isn't he the lead? He's like the commander of the mission, and I'm like, Tim Robbins? Yeah. You know,
I think he's sci-fi.
Yeah.
So you weren't disappointed when they froze his face?
No, not at all. I was glad to see the back of him. I was surprised, although, I mean, I'd rather have seen the back of, say, Jerry O'Connell, but I was like, oh, wow, they got rid of Tim Robbins, and the movie's only halfway through.
He was it Connie Nielsen was his significant other in it?
Yeah, and they're on the mission together, which is very unrealistic. NASA wouldn't allow any of this nonsense. So it wants to be realistic sci-fi, and yet it's all bogus sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And yet it's weightless. And there's a whole middle stretch where, I don't know, they get a hole in the spaceship. It's like the middle stretch action set piece, and they have to rescue the spaceship. And of course, they're all spinning around in zero gravity. And it's like supposed to be very dramatic, but when it's in zero gravity and low speed, it's all desperately unexciting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas, you know, Interstellar's kind of got around its whole gravity thing, you know. But
I will say, you know, 20 years ago, people would have been excited about the special effects, and so therefore they're willing to indulge that lingering around. But nowadays, you'd have to serve the story better and not just, you know,
It's interesting what you say about special effects. Because I had this thought today, and you mentioned Star Wars earlier, and I've made the point on this show before that I think the original Star Wars has aged much better than some of the ones that came after it. And I think, and so in a strange way, like Mission to Mars clearly wants to evoke 2001.
Yeah.
And yet, interestingly, 2001 now is 55 years old or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to convince me. Neither one of these movies tops 2001 for their special effects. That's my opinion. I think,
you're thinking about it per shot, right?
Like, sure. Yeah.
And the thing is, 2001 might as well have had three shots. You know, like it's not like that's because it was lingering so long on things. And so, like, the whole point is, like, people want to have, you know, the special effects you get from Jurassic Park, where there's just a lot of things going on. They're not going to be so wowed by, like, big pastoral shots, you know?
All right. So we have the two movies in terms of the cast. I'm gonna make the case that the cast of Red Planet are just more interesting.
They're just more interesting.
In terms of how the movies looked, so we talked about 2001. 2001, it sort of dovetails this great moment of kind of looking realistic as of its time, the late 60s.
Yeah.
And yet there's like red space suits and all kinds of stuff. So it's kind of got this almost like, it's kind of exciting. There's something sort of, in a kind of sterile way, there's something kind of sexy about 2001.
Yeah, well, it's like a fancy car kind of look, you know, like it's modern. And so it's good enough looking that it's classic. I mean, like when it comes to like computer screens and things like that, that looks, those parts look stupid because they look like they're right from the 60s.
Right.
Whereas they're also talking to their computer. And that's, of course, we aren't even really to a successful talking to the computer yet. So that seems very forward.
And to be fair, I think 2001 is like the first appearance of an iPad-like device. Do you remember that scene when they first, like after all that business on the moon, and then they cut to the mission, and the dudes, mm-hmm. one dude's running and the other dude's eating dinner,
yeah.
and he's got his little tablet and he's reading his messages from Earth on his little tablet.
I'm like,
there you go, that's an iPad. Okay. So in terms of these two movies, while Mission to Mars aspires to be 2001, I love the look of Red Planet. And I love the look of the spacesuits. It just looks cool. You know, and you shouted out, you know, you shouted out Prometheus. And I don't know. I do think that to be like effective science fiction, I do think there has to be something slightly fantastical about an aspect of it. And when I watch Mission to Mars, it's all too mundane. It looks like I'm really on a mission to space, and that ain't very interesting to me.
Like I said, I don't have much else to add. I mean, I remember like three shots of it. So, you know.
Of what, Red Planet or Mission to Mars?
No, both. Oh, okay. I mean, okay. Like, you know, it's not like I have like a deep recollection of the visuals.
Okay, so here's why I'm now going to make the case. So basically, the plot of Red Planet is they have like the robot dog, and it gets out of control, and it starts to want to whack the astronauts who are already trying to escape.
And they have a helicopter thing, like the new one, like that's flying around and like is tied to the dog, right? Not tied, right. But I mean like electronically tied, like it's communicating.
It's like a drone type helicopter thing, and then the dog is a robot, and then their circuits fry, and they then most of the movie is frankly Val Kilmer trying to defeat the robot dog.
It's a lot of MacGyvering.
Yes it is. And even the fact when he escapes back to, because I think basically pretty much they all die apart from him. I think Tom Sizemore definitely doesn't make it.
Yeah, Tom Sizemore gets chewed up by the little buggers.
That's right. Like that. And then Val Kilmer escapes back to the mothership hovering above with Carrie Ann Moss.
Yeah, I think he says, you know, there's some curse about the planet. I forget the heck what it is. And at the end.
Yeah.
You've
already spoiled
it. I don't want to work blue.
Yeah. let me see what... I'm trying to flip back to my anything else about Red Planet. I like on the face of it, Mission to Mars sort of it's got all the sort of credit chops. Big name director, big name music, Oscar winners in the cast. And yet when it comes on cable now, I'm like, yeah, flip through it. Whereas Red Planet, I'll go, yeah, this is pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, well, okay, so tell me, would you recommend people watch either?
So here's the interesting thing. Watching some of the NASA stuff from the other week or the other day and the drones and all this kind of thing, accidentally, Red Planet seems far more prescient of real future than Mission to Mars. When you watch Mission to Mars, it seems very old-fashioned and very like almost like 1960s NASA. Whereas Red Planet has this sort of sheen of, and I know it sounds silly, Mars looks like more, it looks red like it looks red on these NASA things in Red Planet. The Mars on Mission to Mars, I don't know what pictures they were looking at.
Apparently, neither one of them got it. They're like, that's not the way it looks when you're on there. But
no, but I feel like Red Planet looks more like what I'm looking at now.
Yeah. What I think is weird is you look at all the in the movies, you know, it always looks like it's like this baked, hot place. But of course, it's freezing cold.
Yeah. But it's because it's red.
So I'm trying to set you up so then I can come over the top.
Okay.
Do you recommend anybody see either of the movies?
I mean, I've gone this strong behind Red Planet. I'd recommend it. If you've not seen it, and again, I want to be careful here. If you're sitting around at home and you flip through it, stay with it. It won't let you down. If you flip through Mission to Mars, well, just get ready. There's going to be long stretches that are kind of slow and not a lot's happening.
Yeah.
Am I suggesting to anyone to charge $5.99 to your cable bill for either movie? No.
Yeah.
But if you're flicking through, and I'm going to say the same thing now about most of the other pair movies, I would, you know, Armageddon, as much as I don't like the movie, it holds my attention. White House Down, yeah, I'll sit through it for a shooting 'em up. The Gerard Butler, yeah, I'm going to let that one go. I'm going to stick to the rule. The second movie is still more watchable than the first movie. And in this instance, I believe that is the case. Even though it made about $17.
So I would say they're probably both available for free. But
yeah, like, I don't know who's charging for these.
The proper way to watch Mission to Mars would be to sit down and watch it like it's a big deal of a movie. The problem is it's not good enough for that, right?
Right.
You would never do that, right? And so you're never going to really just stop in on it and watch it partway through. Whereas Red Planet is a fun monster movie, you know, and like so, it's probably worth seeing if you can see it. But really, what I'd recommend people do is watch The Martian, which was the movie from just a couple of years ago.
Which I've never seen.
It's better than both of them, of course.
Okay.
But I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek. I mean, it got great reviews. It made money. You know, great reviews, like 90% or something like that. It's not like an immaculate, perfect movie. I personally found it to be kind of dry and, you know, sure, lots of technical stuff. But it's much better done, and it's fairly interesting. So I think that's what you'd actually watch.
That's Ridley. That stars Matt Damon.
Ridley Scott. And
yeah, Ridley
Matt
Scott.
Damon and Jessica Chastain, Kristen Wiig, Jeff Daniels, Michael Pena, Sean Bean, Kate Mara. Donald Glover, Chiwetel Ejiofor. I can't remember.
I mean, that's a heavy hitting cast.
Yeah,
heavy hitting cast.
You know, and it like I said, it would have been a double up. You know, like under our movie review things. In fact, I assume this is recent enough that we did review it.
No, we didn't, because it wasn't a summer movie.
Oh, okay.
It came out in the fall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, you're right. So,
well, maybe anyway, we did. But
the thing, it's based on a book, a guy who was like a science guy who wrote a novel that was, this is the problem with the movie. It's like, here's all the things that could go wrong, and here how you might solve them. Right. Like, you know, if you're there, like he gets left. The whole premise is Matt Damon gets left behind because his fellow astronauts think he's dead already. It turns out he's not. He has to survive and communicate with them with everything's broken and things break more. And he has to get somewhere and do all these things. So it's like an obstacle course of technical stuff.
Right.
And it really just enjoys its technical stuff too much. And so it's pretty dry. And I don't know. It's not very much. It's no real. The characters themselves aren't particularly interesting. You know, there's really no emotional core to them. It's an interesting technical achievement, I think.
But people love it, though. Made loads of money.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, like, I mean, does anybody look back and say, like, oh, yeah, I want to watch that movie over again? I haven't heard anybody say
that.
See,
it comes on TV and I just have no interest. I don't know why.
I think you should watch it because.
Really?
You know, it's just part of your cultural obligation to
see. Okay. I don't know. I'm a bit. Maybe because I was.
Listen, I'm gonna go see this whatever 2036 thing that I mentioned. So 2036 Origin Unknown. So and that's for free on Amazon Prime. So
there is another Mars movie, which I only because of who's in it, and I'm trying to. It's called The Last Days on Mars, and it stars Liev Schreiber. Who's a great actor, Elias Koteas, who's
13.
Yeah. And it's a science fiction horror movie, about something on a Mars base. And it's much more of a full out monster movie. And, it really bombed. It cost $10 million to make and made $24,000. So that is a super bomb.
Luckily. Watch that.
But yeah, that's pretty much you saw your Mars. And it's interesting, and I think we, when we did our own Mars show, we quickly went through the movies and got onto like books and music and stuff like that. And it's strange, like Mars is never really, I don't know, it's become a bit almost mundane.
Which
dovetails back to how I am about it in real life. Like, it's not even in the movies, like Mars. Yeah. Whatever.
Oh, right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's
that's why you get a movie like The Martian now, which it's not really sci-fi at all. It's just barely stepped away from what we're doing now.
Right.
It's just like it's like hiking Everest or something like that.
I mean,
that.
Yeah. And I think to be fair, I mean, for all its faults, that's one of the things Interstellar got right in that it created that. You know, obviously, it's part of the movie, but you go through the wormhole to go to another universe altogether rather than like, hey, we're going to Saturn to save the Earth. I think there is this notion now with sci-fi, and to be fair, to bring it back to what we were talking about, because NASA and everyone is doing all this stuff, do you know what I mean? You almost have to go further out field science fiction-wise.
Yeah.
To sort of like awe inspire.
Same thing as before you had you know, like
right.
You know, stories would have been like traveling the high seas.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Interstellar, which reminds me, I had one last point to make, which might be sort of in a weird way, the most important, the wrong word. But all these things, you know, these movies are have been occasioned by problems on Earth. We might need to go to Mars, or we might need to tap Mars for something else. We might need to go to Mars. And Interstellar, it's like, you know, the Earth is dying, and so we're going to go find something really far away to go to, right? I hate to break it to everybody here. And by everybody here, I mean on Earth. But if Earth is really falling apart to the degree that these people talk about.
Yeah, we're not all leaving.
Nobody's organizing a trip to Mars, right? Like, you know, like, look, we can barely get COVID vaccine out to everybody when we're in the midst of a crisis of people dying. You think they're going to pull off the amount of money and effort it would take to take people to Mars or Interstellar, like other places? Like, Interstellar, that whole thing of like the fact that they were in the thing was supposed to be the ship or whatever it was. It was just, I was like, no. But I just recently realized that, like, you know, this fantasy of we're going to use up Earth and go somewhere else, it's not happening that way, folks. So,
well, I think that's what.
So the lesson is, don't use up Earth, because you're only going to start leaving Earth. Actually, what will happen is, and this is the way it would work, is while Earth is doing well, we'll go there. But then once we can go there, then Earth will do badly, but we'll already be to the second place already. It's like when you leave the old neighborhood and it goes to pot because everybody's moving out.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what's going to happen. It's not like we're going to be able to summon up the stuff like when you're busy. Basically, people are starving and you're going to find a way to get to another planet.
Well, so a part of the backstory for Red Planet is that Earth is in an ecological crisis.
Right.
So that's why they've gone to Red Planet. Mission to Mars, on the other hand, they've just going to Mars. So in a strange way, if you're going to set your science fiction movie, just go to the place.
I thought Mission to Mars had some of that element. I mean, part of Mission to Mars is that the aliens who left Mars because Earth was a problem.
Okay.
Not Earth was a problem. Their planet was not doing
because
well.
Because I'm trying to think, in Ad Astra, there's nothing wrong with Earth. It's just being attacked. So Brad Pitt has to go. So what I'm saying is sort of the overriding plot device.
It's going to be destroyed by the people who are out there.
And I've always found that on a very basic like storytelling rule, if you're under attack from something else, that tends to set up that ticking clock narrative so much better than the other one. To be fair. You talk about Interstellar. Yes, Earth is, you know, blight and we can only eat corn. But I'm sorry, to be completely honest, I'm far more interested in Earth under alien attack. That's far more like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Do you know, right? I mean that. I don't just mean that like in a throwaway way. I mean that quite basic movie version. If you want to create a sense of peril, it is much better that something is coming to smash the place up. Hence, Deep Impact and Armageddon. Whereas, hey man, we're in trouble because we're not recycling. That you're right. It's just not as urgent as aliens are trashing the place.
I was about to say, Waterworld is the more reasonable outcome, more likely outcome than it is that Interstellar. So,
well, actually, no. Wouldn't it be Mad Max? Well, how does Mad Max isn't Mad Max nuclear war? That destroys the place?
They don't never really quite say, except for the fact that at some point things are radioactive. So I don't know that they ever commit to any particular reason why we're in a post-apocalyptic future, but it's post-apocalyptic.
Frankly, to be honest with you, Mad Max the Road Warrior, that's probably what Mars looks like.
Yeah.
The most realistic movie about Mars is about Australia.
Yeah, right.
All right, anything else on any of this Mars stuff?
No, I think we've gotten it covered. I wasn't aware it was Mars Volume 2. I'll have to go back and listen to that again. I can't remember.
No, because you played that great Grateful Dead song, which I'd never heard. It was a Grateful Dead song we closed the show out with. No, not a Fish song. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We'd done Martian all Monster. That. Yeah, we'd done all that, like Mars. We'd done Mars in popular fiction.
Because there is a Grateful Dead Mars Hotel, I think.
You didn't play that.
But it doesn't really talk about Mars. It's just the name of the thing.
All right, so rather than watch the NASA stuff, watch Red Planet. That's my opinion.
There you go.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.